Blog Talk Radio.
This is Kathy Holloway Hill, and I am saying hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of the Living by Design show. I am very, very happy to spend this time with you talking about another very empowering topic. We have a great guest that we're going to be bringing on the line here shortly. But before we get to that, I just want to let everyone know that we are coming up on a season when we are trying to transform ourselves, we're attempting to set goals, and we're trying to make that thing that you really, really, really want in life happen. And that's what we're here to do, is to help that occur. So welcome to the show, and I am ready to get started because we have a magnificent guest. And that is Mr. Robert Mack. He is a best-selling author of Happiness from the Inside Out. I absolutely love that title. Actually, he's a best-selling author of Happiness from the Inside Out. And he's a contemporary spiritual teacher. And Rob imparts a simple but profound message. And he wants you to know that there is a way out of suffering and into peace. And through spiritual awakening, you can find that inner peace and greater fulfillment. And I'm so excited that Robert is going to share his wisdom with us. And I actually met Robert. I've never met him live, but I met him through a mutual endeavor that we both are undertaking. We're both independent coaches for the Jeremy Kyle Talk Show. And I saw his information on the website, and I just knew I had to have him on the show. So I am very, very excited to bring on the line Mr. Robert Mack. How are you doing, Robert?
I'm great. How are you, Kathy?
I am fantastic, fantastic. Now, you have accomplished so many things. You have been all over the media. You've been in the news. You've been in publications, and just a wonderful, wonderful individual. And I know you have a story. We all have a story. It doesn't matter how successful we are in life. We have a story. And I absolutely cannot wait to hear yours. So tell our listeners just a little bit more about you and what you do, and then we'll get to your story and how you got into this business.
I love it. I basically help people live happier lives, happier, healthier, and wealthier lives from the inside out, because that's where happiness exists. That's where happiness lives, on the inside. And, you know, my path to this, you know, sort of career and this place in my life, you know, mostly I basically found my way here through unhappiness. I mean, I think a lot of us, I was trying to find a happier life, you know, through all kinds of different ways. And I grew up, you know, a very, you know, pretty good athlete, you know, pretty good student, and in all ways, pretty successful. I mean, I had parents that absolutely loved me, disciplinarians now, but they absolutely loved me. And, you know, most of my life I spent just trying to achieve things, you know, whether it was better grades or better performance on the field or whatnot. But it eventually led me down a path of cynicism and dysphoria and to a place of eventually I became very, very depressed and very, very suicidal. And, you know, it was sort of a long path and road to get there, and then a long sort of path and road to get out of there. But it was a very dark and lonely, you know, period of my life that I spent, you know, kind of coming to terms with who I was and what I wanted in my life and how to go about getting it.
Well, that's very interesting to hear. Now, let me just ask you a couple of questions about that. And you mentioned that you had a very healthy upbringing. I'll say, you know, not as dysfunctional as some others.
Yeah.
So what do you think was the pivotal moment or the turning point that got you off track and pushed you down a path of destruction, for lack of a better word?
Yeah, you know, I think that for me, you know, first of all, my family in my childhood, while it was incredibly loving, was also incredibly conflict-ridden, you know, with parents that are both, you know, they're struggling to make ends meet. And, you know, three kids and, you know, and growing up and trying to, you know, trying to work out a middle-class life, which we were not. And, but, you know, just always, you know, having some kind of bill or need that wasn't being met. And I think that it sort of started there where, you know, always the conflict and the struggle of just trying to make it. And then when you put on top of that, you know, being a young kid and seeing your parents go through their own, you know, marital conflict and things like that that were a result of some of that financial trouble and just life's troubles, you know, I think you sort of absorb some of that. And then, you know, you sort of layer on top of that just wanting to be, you know, an outstanding individual. You know, my parents had really, you know, taught me to be, you know, an overachiever. And I love that about them. And that's something that I think down deep I'll always have in me. And it allowed me to become a great student and a great athlete. But to some extent, you know, I internalized, you know, something and took it too far. And so, you know, I was always trying to outperform myself. And I always judged myself and love myself based on how well I performed, you know, athletically,
right,
academically, socially. And and then, you know, when I entered college, you know, I began to, you know, study philosophy and psychology. And I just sort of began to sort of weave this very unhappy story about my life. And I very quickly came to realize that most of what I was achieving in my life was very unfulfilling. I mean, the world turned out to be very unfulfilling, and a lot of my achievements were quite futile, and so, you know, I wasn't finding the fulfillment that I always thought I would find when I got the new 3 series, or I got the C class, or, you know, or I, you know, was engaged, or, you know, I went to the Ivy League school, or I went to the, you know, I obtained a job working for a consulting firm, or, you know, making great money. It didn't turn out to be as fulfilling or satisfying as I always imagined, and I'm sure that you have similar experiences like that, you know, either with clients or yourself. But yeah, the world can turn out to be very disappointing if you're not careful.
Right. And you know, it's very, very interesting that you say that. My latest book is entitled Lies, Love, and Life, and a lot of my listeners are familiar with that.
That's a great title.
Exactly, yeah, thank you. That's exactly what I talk about in the book, Robert, because we get so caught up in the lies that we tell ourselves, and that self-lie about self-worth equals accomplishments is one of the biggest self-lies that we get ourselves caught up in, because we start to identify ourselves by what we've accomplished, what we have, the stuff that we accumulate, our cars and our possessions and our stuff and our money. And all of a sudden, if something happens and something occurs and that goes away, guess what else goes away? Your self-worth.
Boom. There it is. There it is.
Yeah.
And
then we start trying to make up for it by, you know, toxic substances, you know, drinking and other things and gambling and alcohol and sex and things that are just making the situation worse. You're just throwing, you know, fuel on fire. So
absolutely.
Can relate to that. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and that's why a lot, you know, I mean, if you talk to, you know, if you've listened or read, you know, any spiritual masters, you know, they all say the same thing to one extent or the other. They say, you know, attachment is misery. You know, identification is misery. What are they talking about? They're talking about just this, that when your identity is attached to things that you have or things that you think, right? Because it's also a different kind of attachment, you know, beliefs that you have that you're attached to. But any, you know, kind of attachment that you have in your life, that right there is the source of misery, your attachment. And so, you know, what both you and I are saying is that it's great to achieve. It's great to, you know, try to outperform yourself. It's great to be a competitor. It's great to go for all of your dreams. But to make your happiness contingent upon your dreams coming true or contingent upon you succeeding in a certain space, well, that's just going to lead to misery no matter what, because the very source and foundation of life is impermanence. I mean, everything changes in life, and everything will pass away, everything, you know, from, you know, dust to dust. And so when you understand that, you know, it surprisingly, it leads you to a much happier life, because now you can enjoy things while they're there. You can enjoy the ice cream, you know, while it's on your plate, realizing all the time that it's not going to be there for very long. And that impermanence brings a level of meaning and beauty and love and joy to your life that you otherwise couldn't even fathom, let alone experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also want to make sure I just add one more piece to this topic while we're on it. When we're talking about associating our self-worth with things and stuff and accomplishments, we can also attach ourselves to people, and we associate our self-worth. And I really don't like the stereotype. I really, really don't. However, I have noticed, because I've got a master's in psychology, and I think you also do too, so I know you studied, you know, behavioral modification and all those types of things and why people think and do what they do. And through my studies, I've noticed that there's a pattern that men tend to measure their self-worth by their accomplishments and things that they have done, their titles and their status and their power, whereas women tend to measure their success by their relationships.
Yep.
Unfortunately, you know, women get caught up in that trap of attaching themselves to a person. And if that relationship fails, all of a sudden they lose their self-worth.
Absolutely. That's absolutely true. That, you know, and that doesn't mean that there aren't, you know, plenty of exceptions to the rule. You know, that there are lots of men that attach themselves and measure themselves against the success of the relationship, and women that measure themselves against the success of their career. So no question about that. But generally speaking, you're absolutely right. And further, it's the attachment itself that's the problem. So it's not a question of going after the success or going after the relationship, but measuring your self-worth in terms of relationship success or in terms of professional success is always going to bring you misery, because by the very nature of those things, relationships come and go, you know, professional success comes and goes, you know. And it's interesting, you know, lots of folks, I have, you know, everyday citizens as clients, and I have, you know, celebrity clients, and they kind of run the gamut as far as types of clients that I have. And the one common theme that I see over and over again is that, you know, and this is true of the people that are, you know, multi-millionaires that have, you know, multiple Grammy Awards, that have accomplished everything that you'd ever think you wanted to accomplish as a child, and people that have absolutely nothing, is that at the very root of it is a lack of unconditional love and unconditional acceptance, and measuring themselves, just like you said, measuring themselves and their self-worth in terms of achievement or accomplishment or what they possess. Absolutely.
Yes, and we've got to own our identity. When we give our identity away, we give our power away. And allowing someone else to define you, allowing something else to define you, you're letting them own your identity. You have to identify who you are from the inside out, and that's why I love the title of your book, which, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and jump into your book. I absolutely love that title. It pretty much says it all. And I'm looking at, I think this is chapter 5, when you're talking about starve the bad seed, feed the good one. I know you could talk about that for hours. So go ahead and give us your wisdom on that piece.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's real simple. It's like, you know, the more you give attention to something, the more it tends to grow. You know, the more you shine a light on something, you know, the more that you feed it, and the more that, you know, the more that you water a thought, or the more attention you give to a particular thought or particular person or particular behavior that you don't want to grow, the more that it grows. And so, you know, the key there is just to be real careful of how you spend your attention, how you spend your time and your energy and your resources, and to make sure that you're spending, you know, your time, energy, resources, and particularly your thought energy, you know, on things that you want to grow, that you want to cultivate, that you want to nurture. And so, you know, you want to be careful of the things that, you know, simple things like media or particular people or particular thoughts that you have that just don't support you. You know, it's just that simple, that you want to make sure that you're, you know, encouraging behavior and thoughts within yourself and others that that actually is supportive and loving, and that helps you to grow and helps you to enjoy a happy, healthy life, and not an unhappy and unproductive one.
And Robert, I get this question so many times. I mean, I get thousands and thousands of emails asking me this question: How do you reshape change your focus? I mean, when that thought is just, you know, when bills are piling up and you are having, you know, health issues and all these things, how do you stop those toxic thoughts from taking root? What can you do to make those thoughts go away? Can you give us some insight into that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the one thing that you don't know, and research has proved this out over and over again, what you don't do is try to fight the thought. So they've done plenty of research and plenty of studies, and they've basically taken people, put them in a room, and said, look at this. They'll have a huge, you know, movie screen-like type, or a huge screen, you know, like a movie screen size, and there'll be a white bear on that screen. They'll say, okay, everybody look at the white bear, and then later they'll say, okay, let's go do something else, a puzzle or a crossword puzzle or something, and they'll tell everybody, now what I don't want you to do is think about that white bear. And so everybody who tries to not think about that white bear, what happens? They all think about it. So the key there is don't try to fight a thought. It never works. Instead, distract yourself. Find a different thought to think. You know, something else. You know, if you've got a dog or a cat, go pet your dog, go pet your cat. But if there are particular thoughts that hurt, you know, you want to try to distract yourself and find things that don't hurt and come back to that problem or that issue later. And what you'll find is that when you come back to a problem or issue or painful thought later, it doesn't nearly seem as problematic or as painful. And so the first key is to sort of distract yourself from thoughts that are very painful. And look for, you know, more productive thoughts to think. So, and it just takes practice. You know, over time, practicing them more and more and more, you become better and better at pivoting, is what we call it, pivoting from a hurtful, painful thought to a more productive, more joyful one. So that's the first key. You know, one of the other keys, I think, is just to think less. I mean, the more present you can become in your life, and the more you can love and live and enjoy your life, the more you seem to find your problems disappearing. And, you know, it's kind of strange that, you know, a lot of the problems that we think of as problems aren't really problems to be solved as much as they're mysteries to be lived. And so a lot of life is just a mystery. I mean, there are certain things that just aren't meant to be figured out. It doesn't mean that the answer won't come to you eventually, but it does mean that if you spend your life solving problems or looking for problems to solve, you're going to live a very miserable life. And much of life is, you know, is really just meant to be enjoyed and to be lived. And sometimes in living the questions, you know, you find your way to the answer. And that's really one of the most important keys I can share today, you know, in and above just changing your thinking. Because changing your thinking is hard, and it's a short-term approach, you know.
Right. Now talk a little bit about that old dreaded comfort zone. In my book, I actually don't even like to call it a comfort zone because it's nothing comfortable about it. I like to call it a place of familiarity. We want to stick in that place of familiarity, but it's not helping us. How can we get out of that place? Because I'm looking at this chapter where you're talking about so many different potential ways that you can stop getting or move yourself out of that habitual type of behavior where you just do the same things all the time. And, of course, if you do the same things all the time, you're going to continue to get the same result all the time. So there are many things that you're talking about that you can do differently to try to shift the way you're thinking, shift that focus that you have on the thing that you don't want.
I absolutely love the way you put that, Kathy, you know, and you make such a great point. You know, what gets in our way more than anything else in the world is ourselves and our habits. You know, we have habitual patterns and behaviors and ways
of
being in the world.
We're creatures of habit.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so, you know, the first thing for me is, you know, I'm sort of intellectual by nature, but one of the things that I found over time is that the more, you know, sometimes changing habits that are ingrained in you or that you have been programmed into you for so long is very, very challenging. And so, you know, one approach is to try and do different things, of course. A better approach I found is to be completely present and awake and aware when you're doing whatever you're doing. So for a long time, you know, I had a friend and he was struggling with, you know, a drinking problem. I mean, he wasn't an alcoholic, but he was certainly heading down that road. And so, you know, one of the things that he began doing, which was incredibly successful, was to be a lot more present. And by present, I mean not caught up in his mind and his thoughts about what he was doing, but totally absorbed and totally in a place of like what we call no mind about it. He was totally present, noticing how he felt when he drank, just feeling all the sensation, noticing how he felt when he was done drinking, noticing how he felt the day after. And the more present he was as he began to do, you know, sort of go through his old routine and his old habits, the more he came to understand and really feel how uncomfortable it actually was. So the whole time he thought it was comfortable drinking. The more present and aware he was while he continued his old habits, the more uncomfortable it became. Isn't that interesting? And so then he didn't come to a place where he had to force himself to change through understanding and through experiencing, you know, in a very present-minded kind of way, the old behavior. It naturally became very uncomfortable, and there was nothing more that he really needed or had to do except just continue being present. And over time, the behavior dropped itself. And so I think a lot of times, you know, we get in our own way because we're trying to force something before it's time. And so, you know, we may be ready to drop the drinking or drop the smoking or drop the unhappiness, drop the misery. And we try to force it by thinking happier thoughts or, you know, less miserable thoughts at least. And what we find is that long term, that doesn't work nearly as well as just being absolutely present when you're having the miserable thoughts, when you're having the thoughts about drinking, when you're actually drinking, when you're having the thoughts about not working out. Just be totally present and see how it feels when you eat the junk food. Be totally in it, not caught up in your mind about it, but really taste the food, really take your time, you know, and see how it feels. And over time, the behaviors tend to drop themselves. It's really quite a profound spiritual message there.
Absolutely. That's so true. And I like to ask, you know, whenever I work with my clients, one of the things that I like to do when we're going through the initial stage is to ask them, are you happy?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a very simple question, and sometimes they'll waver back and forth, and I say, there's yes or no. There's no gray area. Either you're happy or you're not. And when they say no, because they typically do, then I ask him why. And typically the answer is coming from all these superficial things that we're discussing right now. It has nothing to do with what's going on the inside. And that's why I love your book. I love the title of your book. And I'm going to be purchasing the book, and I encourage everyone who's listening to this to purchase the book as well, because it is on the inside. Happiness happens in you before it happens to you.
Oh, boom. There it is. I love it, Kathy. And I love the way you go in with clients, you know, and with friends and with yourself, right? And I mean that literally and figuratively, the way you go in. You know, you're going straight at them and you're saying, you know, are you happy? And it's interesting because lots of us we avoid that question. It's a very simple question. Are you happy?
Right.
Or are you purposeful? Or, you know, are you enjoying this moment? And and it's interesting because a lot of the things, you know, and reasons we give for not being happy, for instance, have to do, just like you said, with external things, okay? And they also have to do with either the past or the future. But if you look at yourself and where you are right this moment, this very moment, forget what's happening tomorrow or what might happen in 10 minutes or what happened 10 minutes ago, but in this very moment, are you happy? And 99 times out of 100, the answer is yes. If you really dig deep, look right now, what's so uncomfortable about your situation? What's so uncomfortable about where you sit and the air that you're breathing in and the trees outside and the view that you have from where you are? And, you know, it's very interesting that, you know, our minds are incredible problem solvers. I mean, you know that, you know, working in the psychology field, and I know that. But they're also incredible troublemakers. I mean, they create problems and they create trouble just as much as they solve it. And in fact, you know, the more your problems seem to go away, the more your mind seems to create more and more problems. And so, you know, the real key for me, you know, to living a happier life, you know, is learning to be more present and learning to slip more and more out of my head.
Yes, yes. And one of the things I talk about in my book is that we, instead of acknowledging, and that's why I like to ask that question, because we tend to not acknowledge what's going on. We would rather just throw on a mask and play the game of pretense. Everything's fine. Oh, I'm good. Knowing that we're miserable, knowing we're not happy, knowing that things aren't being fulfilled inside of us. We don't like our job, or we don't like this, we don't like that. Instead of throwing on that mask and playing pretend, you've got to face what it is that's going wrong. You can't fix what you don't face. And I think it all starts there with that acknowledgement.
Yeah, it's for most people, it's very scary to face themselves. You know, it's very scary to look inside because, you know, part of it is, well, you know, if I do discover I'm unhappy, what will I do? Or if I do discover that the life I'm living is not the life meant for me or not the life that I want, oh, my gosh, I'm going to have to change everything. I have to change my partners. I'm going to have to change, you know, my business or my career. I'm going to have to change where I live. And, yeah, that's absolutely true, that the first step to progress is discontent. You know, the first step to living a happier life is recognizing that you're living in an unhappy one now. And that's very scary for people. But the truth is that you can postpone it. You can postpone it for, you know, most of your life. But, you know, come hell or high water, you will have to face yourself eventually.
And you don't have to jump straight into all of these changes. I mean, take it slowly. You don't have to just, you know, boom, one day you're going to wake up and everything is going to be perfect. Just change. I love what you're saying in your book about, you know, just changing small things. You take it one step at a time. You know, make one small change and then the next change and then the next change. And do it in your time, in your way, what's comfortable for you, so that you won't get pushed backwards. The whole idea here is to make tiny baby steps until you can change your behavior, and then when you change your behavior, you're able to change your life, and that's what it's all about.
Beautiful, Kathy. Quite poignant. That's exactly it, because what a lot of people do, and I'm sure you've seen this, I've seen this plenty in my practice, is that people want to change their behavior. They want to change their lifestyle. They say, oh, well, I really want to live a happy life. I want to live happily ever after. I'm going to move to the islands. I'm going to move to South Beach. I know that because I used to live there. And I'm going to, you know, get a divorce, or I'm going to get married, or have a kid, or all these external things, these lifestyle changes. And what happens is, you know, people forget. They take themselves with them wherever they go, with whoever they meet. They're the same person. And so the same, you know, attitude and way of thinking, way of being that got them into that mess, that got them into the unhappy mess to begin with, they take with them into the next relationship, the next city, the next career. So it doesn't, you know, when you change things from the outside in, it doesn't stick. When you do it from the inside out, it sticks, and then it also leads to the lifestyle changes. And so happiness is, you know, we're talking about inner wealth, inner riches. We're talking about something inner, you know.
So true, so true. Robert, we truly do share so many different beliefs and philosophies, and we're coming up on our last 2 minutes of the show, and I knew this interview was going to go very fast because I knew you were a wealth of knowledge. I have checked out all of your accomplishments and your books and everything, and I'm just so happy that you were able to join us this evening. And I would like to bring you back because I have so many people dialed in, and I know some of them probably wanted to get on and ask you a question. But we will get to you on the next time Robert returns to the show, because he is a very, very, very articulate speaker, and he's just a wonderful individual. And I am so blessed and so happy that you were able to join us tonight. Now, Robert, really quickly, please give us your website, or how can listeners get in contact with you?
Yeah, you can go to happinessfromtheinsideout.com. You can write me an email there. You can contact me there. And, Kathy, thank you so much for having me on. You are just an incredible inspiration and just a consummate, you know, life coach and author. And I love your work, and please continue what you're doing. I feel so blessed to know you.
Well, thank you. Same here, same here. And I'm going to let you take us out with one final word of wisdom in 20 seconds or less.
Quiet your mind. Boom. That's it. You know,
powerful.
Yeah, that's it. The more you can kind of quiet your mind, the more you'll sort of dive in to something of real value and real worth in your life, and that feeling will just it will become, you know, your lived a lived experience, not something that you just talk about or think about, but it'll become a lived experience. And so dive deep inside.
You and I are so on the same track. I was thinking that exact thought, because when you quiet your mind, guess what? You can connect to the inner you, and that's how you find it. That's how you find that happiness, by connecting to that inner. Oh, I just love it, love it. Robert, thank you so very much. You are an amazing individual, and I thank you for spending this time with us. We are going to sign off for now. We thank our guests. We thank you for dialing in. Don't worry, we will have Robert back on. I see so many people coming in late, but we will have him back. So thank you. We are going to be signing off for now. Holloway Hill, and you are listening to the Living by Design Show. Good evening, everyone.